So, you try to practice hospitality, and you have a family come over, and they've got a little boy or two. When they get in the house, the little boy jumps up on the couch and runs across the couch and jumps on the coffee table with his boots on. Then he starts chasing his sister through the house, and she's screaming, and he's pulling her hair. And he knocks over a lamp. And you look over at the parents, and they're just, aren't you going to do something? And they just kind of smile and say, well, boys will be boys. Unfortunately, it continues. The boy gets to be older, a teenager. Maybe he goes out with other young boys, influenced by them, gets to drinking. Maybe they get involved in vandalism. They slash some tires. And as young boys are expected to do, they get involved in illicit sex. And I know for a fact there's been good people who simply say, well, boys will be boys. Will boys be boys? Let me ask you a question. Have you known any boys that grew up that respected other people's property, even when they were young, that they were taught, you can't touch that. That doesn't belong to you. And that you behave when you're in these people's home. Have you ever known young teenager boys that did not involve themselves in sex and vandalism and ruination and thievery and drinking? I have. The idea that boys must be rebellious and disrespectful and wild is not something that's true in every case I know. And the fact is, the Bible testifies it doesn't have to be that way. Open your Bible to 1 Samuel. 1 Samuel chapter 2. You remember that Hannah had prayed for a child, and she was given Samuel. In chapter 2 and verse 11, you can see that she wanted to dedicate her son to the service of God. She was so grateful for God giving her this boy. And so she brought him to the temple. And it says, the boy ministered to the Lord before Eli the priest. I don't know exactly how old he was. In verse 18, it says, Samuel was ministering before the Lord as a boy, wearing a linen ephod. And his mother would make him a little robe and bring it to him from year to year when she would come up with her husband to offer the yearly sacrifice. I'm not sure that fits the idea of a teenager. Maybe a young boy. Can you imagine if you were Eli and some mother dropped her kid off to help you in the temple? You say, take that kid home. You turn the table of showbread over, break the candlestick, and go into the Holy of Holies, and no telling what else. There's something here that this boy had been taught responsibility and respect for authority, that his mother could take that young boy and leave him at the temple to serve there with Eli. And I say temple, tabernacle. Look at verse 26. Now the boy Samuel was growing in stature and in favor both with the Lord and with men. So as he got older, he continued in that course. And growing in favor with men, they thought well of him. They weren't sorry to come there to worship and that young man be there. And evidently God was pleased with the conduct of that young man. Verse 1 of chapter 3, it says the boy Samuel was ministering to the Lord before Eli. How old was he at this time? Maybe an older teenager? I'm not certain. Verse 19, however, you remember when Eli had these, or Samuel had these visions, and Eli wanted to know what it was. Samuel told him what it was. And then verse 19, it says, Samuel grew, and the Lord was with him, and let none of his words fail. So Samuel told him that God had spoken to him and told him about the future. It wasn't a very pleasant future for Eli. But Samuel told him what God had said, and it says, God let none of his words fail. If a person can predict the future, a future that's unexpected and unknown, and that they have no control over, and it comes to pass, what are they? Next verse tells you. All Israel from Dan even to Beersheba knew that Samuel was confirmed as a prophet of the Lord. So Samuel is out of character, if you please, with the concept that young boys are just expected to be rebellious and break things and be disruptive and uncontrollable. That certainly wasn't true. Here's another story about a young boy. This boy was older, probably mid-teens. Name was David. 1 Samuel chapter 16, verse 7. When God was going to select another king to replace Saul, God told Samuel, do not look at his appearance or the height of his stature, because I've rejected him. Talking about Eliab, an older brother. For God sees not as man sees, for man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. You know, Samuel was young, had the look of youth. You wouldn't think this is the guy to be the next king. But God doesn't look at how tall he's grown, the complexion of his skin. He looks at the heart, even of a teenage young man. You young teenage boys that are in this audience, right now, as you sit on your pew and listen to this lesson, understand God knows who you are, and He knows whether you're listening. He knows what your intent is and whether or not you'll do anything with what you've heard in the Bible class this morning, for example. So here's a young boy that God was very pleased with and was going to make him king. Over in chapter 17 and verse 13, the three older sons of Jesse had gone after Saul to the battle, and the names of the three sons who went to the battle were Eliab, the firstborn, second to him Abinadab, and the third Shammah. David was the youngest, and the three oldest followed Saul. David went back and forth from Saul to tend his father's flock at Bethlehem. Here, he was responsible enough to care for his dad's flock. I wonder how many young boys could be put in charge of a flock of sheep. There's dangers, you know. The wolves, the lions. In fact, David faced some of that. But he learned responsibility. Did his father teach him? I don't know. Somebody must have. But the idea that young boys can't learn to be responsible, that all you expect them to do is play on the iPad or the phone or run around and have fun. Here's a young boy that had responsibility. David did. Maybe that's what prepared him for what you continue to read. In verse 33, Saul said to David, you're not able to go against this Philistine to fight against you. You remember Goliath was making fun of the armies of Israel? And one time when David went there, he heard Goliath making fun of the armies of Israel and of their God. And David was very concerned about it. And so he said, I'll fight this Philistine, verse 32. Saul said, you can't fight this Philistine, you're just a boy. 37, David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion, from the paw of the bear, He'll deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. Can a young boy, say before he's 20, have a faith of his own? A faith that may differ from his elders and peers? Is that possible? This boy did. So I'll fight the giant. God will help me. And you know the rest of the story that he did. And then you go down to verse 42. The Philistine looked and saw David and disdained him for his budding youth and ruddy with a handsome appearance. That tells you he was still very young when all this took place. There's Josiah. You know the story of Josiah. Look at 2 Chronicles. What a testimony to what a young boy can be. I'd sure like to know more about the influences in Josiah's life that made this boy what he was. I don't know what they were. His dad wasn't a good influence. There was somebody else, maybe his mother, maybe a priest. But anyway, it's very interesting. At verse 1, it says he was 8 years old when he became king. And then in verse 3, the 8th year of his reign, while he was still a youth, he began to seek the God of his father David. 16 years old. I know we've got some young boys in our audience that are 12, 13, 14, something like that. What if you were put in charge of a nation? A nation. Not a basketball team. Not some group at school. A nation. A nation corrupt. A nation where the older people were worshiping idols. A nation where people had turned from God. Would you be this kind of young man? You could be. At 16 years old. And he began to purge Judah and Jerusalem from the high places. Can you imagine the opposition he faced when he did that? And then in verse 8 it says, in the 18th year of his reign, he purged the house. I skipped something in verse 3. The 12th year of reign, he began to purge Judah and Jerusalem. How old is he now? 20. And so you can see here's a young man that defies the idea that boys must be reckless and rebellious. The story of Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, taken from their home country while they were teenagers. Daniel may have been as young as 15. Taken to a foreign land, put in a foreign university, taught their language, given pagan names. But what a great story about Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego who purposed to serve the Lord and would not be turned from that even when there were threats, chapter 3, on their lives. Then there's Timothy. You remember 2 Timothy 1:5? He talked about his mother and his grandmother. What about his daddy? We don't know anything about his daddy except that probably he was a pagan. No indication he was a believer. And yet in verse 5, he said, I'm mindful of the sincere faith within you which first dwelt in your grandmother Lois and your mother Eunice. I'm sure it's in you as well. So here's Paul writing his final letter, as far as we know, his death letter, if you please. And he talks about a young man. By this time, he's in his mid-30s. But he goes way back in his boy's life to the time when maybe he sat on his mother's knee or went over and visited with his grandmother. And you've got this faith, and they had an influence of putting that within you. How powerful was that? Because when you get over to Acts, the 16th chapter, chapter 3 says, from a babe you've known the Holy Scriptures. And when you get over to Acts chapter 16, verse 1 through 3, and Paul is going to start on his second preaching journey. He wants this young man named Timothy to go with him, verse 3. You see in verse 2, he was well spoken of by the brethren. He had a good reputation. Probably, the indications are from the chronology of the book of Acts that he wasn't 20. Maybe 18. Grew up, evidently, in Lystra, a pagan city, without a father to influence him in righteousness. You young men in our audience, you may have a daddy who's not a Christian. That's no excuse. You may go to school where there's cursing and drinking and all kinds of things going on. It's no excuse. And I hope that mothers and fathers and grandpas and grandmas won't buy into the idea, well, boys will be boys. We just have to let them go through this reckless, irresponsible period in their life. It's just not so, folks. It doesn't have to be that way. Boys can be responsible boys. We've seen that in those examples that we gave. Look, in Titus chapter 1 and verse 6, for a man to be qualified as an elder, it says he must have, some verses say children who believe, some verses say have faithful children, which I prefer. And the word faithful can mean can be trusted. Having faithful children, and the next phrase favors that interpretation, not accused of riot and dissipation. Here are responsible young men. They're not wild and rebellious against their father. His father can put his trust in these boys. Look, if boys must be boys, this wouldn't be true. There'd be no men qualified to be elders on that basis. And this is important because boys live to their expectations. Parents, don't tell your boys, well, you're a bad boy. You may be a good boy who acts bad. Teach him you can be a good boy, and I expect you to be a good boy. Well, Joey did it, or Tom. I don't care what Joey and Tom did. Doesn't make me any difference. Here's what I expect of you, and here's what you can be. And young boys in our audience, if you're listening to me right now, let me look over the audience and see. Yeah, I see some of them looking at me. You can be a responsible young man. A parent. Trained expectations. If you've grown up in the culture, boys will be boys. You just expect it. Then you don't do anything to change it. And it becomes a continuing cycle. So that boy grows up. He becomes a father. What's he going to expect of his kids? Oh, well, boys will be boys. And on we go. But you know what? There was a law in the Old Testament about responsibility. Look over at Exodus chapter 21. First of all, verse 15. He who strikes his father's mother shall surely be put to death. Hey, boys and girls, how would you like to live under that law? And then, he talks about kidnapping and cursing. But then look at verse 18. If men have a quarrel and one strikes the other man with a stone or with his fist, and he does not die but remains in bed, if he gets up and walks around outside on his staff, then he who struck him shall go unpunished. He shall only pay for his loss of time. So there's some consequences now. And this, they get in a fight, you hurt somebody, there are potential consequences of that. And he says you'll take care of him until he's completely healed. How would you like to do that? You get in a fight, you break a guy's arm, okay? You're going to carry his books. You're going to go do the work for him. You're going to help him out. Oh, I don't want to do that. Really? And then you look down at verse 22. If men struggle with each other and strike a woman with child so that she gives birth prematurely, yet there's no injury, he shall surely be fined as the woman's husband may demand of him, and he shall pay as the judges decide. But if there's further injury, just skip out, leave out the word further. It's in italics. If there's injury, then you shall appoint as a penalty life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, bruise for bruise. Imagine that. Get in a fight. Two boys get in a fight, and they knock a pregnant woman down and hurt her, and maybe her baby dies. Oh, I'm so sorry. It was just boys being boys under the law. I don't know if they ever did it, but this was the law. You die. You think if we lived under that kind of law today, parents would say, let me tell you something, boy. When we're in a group and when there's people around, you're going to respect that. You go on to read the rest of the chapter, the same is true with verse 28. Ox gores a man or woman to death, the ox will be stoned. But look at verse 29. However, if an ox was previously in the habit of goring and its owner had been warned, yet he does not confine it and it kills a man or woman, the ox will be stoned. Listen to the next phrase. And its owner should be put to death. What? If the owner of the ox is responsible for what his ox did when he knew his ox was a problem, what about a father who knows his boy is a danger to society and does nothing about it? Goes on to talk about some other scenarios where a person is responsible for what they know and don't do anything about. Boys injure boys and girls. They hit them, they strike them, they wound them, they bruise them. Boys go out and get girls pregnant. Kids are born into this world without a good family. Oh, well, boys will be boys. What if the parents were held responsible? And in these cases, in fact, the one who did the injury was also held responsible. And I'll tell you, there's another line. Boys may be boys, but rulers ought to be rulers. In 1 Samuel chapter 3, verse 13, Eli was the high priest. His boys were acting irresponsibly. He did nothing about it except he talked to them. But God was not pleased with his action as the ruler. God expected him to rise above that and do what his job was. In Romans chapter 13 and verse 4, when we see about civil government, Romans chapter 13, verse 4, that the civil government is a minister of God to you for good. If you do what is evil, be afraid. Maybe if your boy gets in trouble and has to go to jail, maybe it might be good for him to spend a night there. I know there's a story I read years ago about a family who had a girl. It was a girl. Imagine girls being rebellious. Sweet little things. Yeah, they can too. And she had been getting in trouble, and they'd talked to her, and no results. She got in trouble, got in jail. She called them. They wouldn't go get her. They left her in jail. I don't remember how many nights. The girl began to change her thinking. And these people wrote a book, I think, or started a movement. It's called Tough Love. They're actual people. And the idea is that maybe young people ought to suffer the consequences of their actions. There's tough love. I know this. It says, the ruler is a minister of God. For you doing what is evil, you do what's evil. God intends, at least, for government to do something about it. Protect fellow citizens. And if you continue to read the verse, it says he does not bear the sword in vain. That means death. Death. And rulers ought to be rulers. If the ruler is the father of the boy, it may be kind of difficult, but that's what God intended. And what all that tells you is that fathers must be fathers. Yeah, boys may be have a tendency because of their influence or culture, environment, to act like irresponsible boys. But let's look at the words of wisdom. Let's turn to Proverbs chapter 13, verse 24. He who withholds the rod of discipline, in other words, what does he do? Well, the reason he does that, he loves his boy so much. That's not what this text says. It says he hates his son. We're talking in our Bible class about different kinds of love. One of the kinds of love, it's not in the husband-wife relationship, but it is in the family relationship. It's a natural love. And there ought to be a natural love. That newborn baby, you hold it in your arms. That's your baby. That's your flesh and blood. They're just a natural love. And that's good. And that ought to be. But there's another kind of love that should regulate that. And that's caring love. And when a man doesn't discipline his son, he acts like a fellow who does not have that kind of love. He acts like somebody who hates his son because he's withholding from his son what's good for him. Read the next verse. Next line. He who loves him, disciplines him. This version says diligently. One version says betimes. That is early. He's attentive to it. Why? Because he cares. Not because his heart says, I'm really going to like this. Not that. And so fathers need to be fathers. In chapter 22, in verse 15, he said, foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. Said, I just don't know about that kid. Looks like he gets bound and determined. Well, that's true sometimes. But look, the rod of discipline will remove it far from him. I'm going to tell you what, folks, listen. A little tap on the behind is not the rod of discipline. All it does is make the kid mad. You got to get that foolishness out of their heart, whatever that takes. Now, I don't mean wound them. I don't mean take a 2x4 and hit them on the head. I'm not talking about that kind of thing. Shame on a parent that wounds them. But the point is that foolishness is bound up in their hearts. If you're a loving parent, you're going to do everything in your power to set them free. Young people, if you got parents like that, thank God. They're trying to help you. They're trying to save you. In chapter 29, verse 15, he said, the rod and reproof goes hand in hand. Let the kid know why you're doing what you're doing. Have him to understand. The rod and reproof give wisdom. But a child who gets his own way brings shame to his mother. So his mother's job too. You know, mothers sometimes, that's my dear little boy. You see this on the news. Some boy went out and shot something up or hurt somebody or got drunk and hit somebody. Oh, my poor little darling. That's probably been the problem all the life. She made excuses for her poor little darling. And so mothers here come in the picture. Child who gets his own way brings shame to his mother. You know what? Boys will be men. That little boy is so cute right now. And you can... You know, it's interesting to me, isn't it? I see parents now with leashes, like dog leashes. They can't control their kids. They put them on a leash. What? You might can do that when they're 2 years old. What are you going to do when they're 15 years old? And of course they say, now, little Johnny, don't do that. Johnny does it anyway. Now, Johnny, number one. Now, Johnny, two. Hogwash. What are you going to do with little Johnny when he's 15? Proverbs 19:18 says, discipline your son while there's hope, and do not desire his death. Now that verse can be interpreted two or three different ways. One way is, don't desire his death. Don't do anything to kill him. That's not what you. That's not the aim of this. The other way is, if you do not discipline your son, it's like signing his death warrant, spiritually and morally. Boys will be men. What will they be? Look, you can train your child right and they still turn out wrong, because they're free moral agents. But we have a responsibility as fathers and mothers to do something about it. And finally, look at Ecclesiastes chapter 11. Ecclesiastes chapter 11. Rejoice, young man. Young man here is not a 3 or 4 year old, 5, 6 year old. It's maybe a man who's in his teens, maybe in his 20s. Even maybe a little older. They use the word young man that way. Rejoice, young man, during your childhood, and let your heart be pleasant during the days of your young manhood. So God wants young people to enjoy their youth and their strength and their vitality. And follow the impulses of your heart, the desires of your eyes. But note the next sentence. Yet know. God will bring you to judgment for all these things. Chapter 12, 1. Remember your Creator. So you young people in the audience say, oh, I know God. I can quote verses. I can quote Genesis 1, 1. In the beginning, God created. I remember that. So I got this one made. No. It's when you're out there, or when you're by yourself, or when you're with your friends, and you've got a decision to make about things to do, you think about your Creator. Don't forget Him. You remember your Creator. Your friends may like it. You may find it enjoyable. But remember your Creator. in the days of your youth. And devote your life to serving Him while you have the abilities. As He goes on to point out, you're going to get old. You're not going to have all those abilities. Now is the time to remember your Creator. And then at the last part of the chapter, at the end of the book, He said, "Beyond this, my son, be warned." Verse 12, "The writing of many books is endless, and excessive devotion to books is weary of the body." There's all kinds of books you can buy about child rearing, about life under the sun. But here is the perfect manual. And He said the conclusion when all has been heard is, "Fear God and keep His commandments," because this applies to every person. Or some versions say this is the whole duty of man. Every person. Boys, girls, men, women. Everybody. "For God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it's good or evil." So, now, Sam, I've been leading songs this morning about not delay. I don't know, young people in our audience, where you're at. Maybe you're not old enough to obey the gospel. I don't know. Maybe you don't know and understand what you need to know. I don't know. But I'll tell you this, if you are old enough to make your choices for right and wrong and to be accountable before God, you're old enough to die and go to hell. So if, young or old, you need to turn your life to God and seek forgiveness in Jesus Christ, why do you delay? Seek the Savior while you can. And if we can assist you in some way, then let it be known as we stand and as we sing.